flown. I have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
Lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packin' mama, lay that pistol down. Oh, drinking beer in a cabaret, was I having fun? Until one night she caught me right, now I'm on the run.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packin' mama, lay that pistol down. Oh, I see you every night, Bing, and I'll woo you every day. I'll be your regular mama, and I'll put that gun away.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packin' mama, lay the thing down before it goes off and hurts somebody. Oh, she kicked out my windshield and she hit me over the head. She cussed and cried and said I'd lied and she wished that I was dead.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packing mama, lay that pistol down. We're three tough gals from deep down Texas way. We got no pals, they don't like the way we play. We're a rough, rootin', tootin', shootin' trio, but you're to see my sister Cleo. She's a terror, make no error, but there ain't no laissez-faire. Here's what we tell her.
Lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol baggin' mama, lay that pistol down.
The draw was slow, so now they know you can't do that to Maine.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down.
Pistol packin' mama, lay that pistol down.
Oh, singing songs in a cabaret, was I having fun? Till one night it didn't seem right, now I'm on the run.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down, pistol back and mama, lay that pistol
down.
Oh, pistol back and mama, lay that pistol down.
This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces. Hope you're all having a great weekend. Tonight, we begin with kind of the age-old problem, a mystery about a man who feels that his wife and his business partner are cheating on him. And then we go on to kind of a comical mystery from the suspense series, where a gentleman is just working, cleaning up office buildings, and suddenly he comes on a bonanza, something that can make him, in 1947, when it was done, a small fortune. If you have any questions for me about these programs, I just love to comb the archives every week, but just write to me at bruce@radiomasterpieces.com, and I'll be sure to answer your questions. I always like to throw in a little bit of comedy, too, because I think it kind of takes off the edge of these mysteries. Thanks so much for listening. Now, let's go and tune in to the old-time mysteries.
Get ready to hear a gory little story entitled Boomerang. and stars Martin Gable in the role of John Keeler. So, hitch up your chair, switch off the lights, and look out.
Ah! Help, help me. No one heard me. No one came. And in my back there was a kind of numbness. I screamed, "Ah! Help! Help!" But no one answered. I was utterly alone, helpless, watching my life dripping drop by drop to the floor. Then the blackness closed in. When I regained consciousness, two uniformed patrolmen were bending over me, looking frightened and puzzled.
Suicide, Riley?
Either that or murder.
Their voices seemed to come echoing over an aching void. I wanted to tell them how it had happened. I wanted to tell them about Bill Sloan and Helen and the airplane. I was frantic. I had to tell them.
He's trying to say something, Riley.
Poor guy. He can't talk. He's too far gone.
I couldn't talk. My tongue was thick like cotton. My lips moved, but that was all. It was all shut up inside me. They would never know how it had happened.
Riley, it looks to me like murder.
Murder, yes, it was murder. And if only I could have spoken, I would have told them about my nervous breakdown, about the sanitarium. That's where it began, back there in that plushy prison. I was locked up behind that big wall, and my wife and my partner, they had the chance to discover each other. And then when I came out, the doctor said I was cured. Their false solicitude. And all the while, suspicion was building up inside me. I was already suspicious that day. I caught them by surprise. I'd come directly home from my regular visit to the psychiatrist instead of returning to the office. Bill was there in the living room with Helen. My partner and my wife, laughing together. I closed the front door silently. The rugs muffled my footsteps. I entered the room suddenly, wanting to see their faces when they saw me.
Oh, what, darling.
Hello, Helen.
John, how did you happen to come home in mid-afternoon? Why aren't you at the office?
I was thinking of asking you that question. Bill made some flimsy excuse, but I caught the look of guilt on his face. He was a bachelor, smooth with words, successful with women. And I was beginning to believe he had succeeded with my wife. Oh, I had evidence. There was the time a few nights later. Helen and I were going up to bed. As we passed the umbrella stand at the foot of the stairs, I noticed something. Helen, just a moment. This umbrella, it's Bill's.
Oh, is it?
Yes, it is. What's doing here?
Well, he must have forgotten it when he was over the other day. Take it out of the office in the morning, will you, darling?
I made no reply. We continued up the stairs and went to bed. I waited until Helen was asleep, then crept out of bed and down the stairs. There was the umbrella. I reached out my hand, afraid to touch it, but I had to. The umbrella was still wet. It had rained that afternoon. I said nothing about it the next morning. Oh, I was suspicious enough, but I told myself I had to be absolutely sure. And then, that next night, it happened. Helen went out after dinner, saying she had an appointment with her hairdresser. As the door closed behind her, I picked up the phone and dialed the number.
Hello? Crescent Beauty Salon?
Alberta, this is Mr. John Keeler. I'm calling for my wife to verify her appointment for this evening.
Mrs. Keeler? But, monsieur, she has no appointment for this evening.
Now, I was sure. Bill and Helen were together. I struggled to control my emotions. My head was whirling. I felt ill. Weak. My heart was pounding in my chest. The room began to spin. First the floor lamp, then the chairs, finally the table whirling around my head. I needed air, air. I forced myself out of my seat, stumbled across the floor to the window, and threw it open. The stars, too, were spinning, chasing each other in a mad race across the sky. I sucked the fresh air into my lungs, and slowly the stars resumed their normal positions. I drew my head back into the room, and then it struck me across the nostrils. Gas. The room was full of gas. Yes, I found one gas jet open in the kitchen stove. I fought against the logical conclusion, struggled against it all that night and into the next day. But I could no longer stand it by mid-afternoon. That open gas jet last night had been no accident. They were planning to have me put out of the way. Well, two could play at that game. I also could commit murder. I worked out a plan. First, the business trip to Buffalo that I'd been putting off for weeks. I could use that as my alibi. I called my secretary.
Yes, Mr. Keeler.
Miss Jackson, I've decided to go up to Buffalo tomorrow. Could you get me a drawing room on the 5 o'clock train?
I'll call the railroad station right now, Mr. Keeler.
A few minutes later, she called me back. I had the train reservation. So far, so good. I went to the bank, and from the bank to the airline terminal.
What can I do for you, sir?
I want a seat on the Rochester plane. The plane that leaves New York at 9:30 tomorrow night.
9:30. What is the name, sir?
Dunham. Roger Dunham.
Well, you're a lucky man, Mr. Dunham. It's the last seat on the plane.
Roger Dunham. That assumed name would prove my alibi. The details of my scheme were falling into place. I went home, and at dinner told Helen I was leaving for Buffalo tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Must you go tomorrow, John? Can't it wait?
I've been putting this trip off too long already. I'll leave straight from the office and come home the next afternoon.
Well, you're being a little inconsiderate. I'll be all alone here overnight.
Oh, come, Helen. You're not afraid of anything, are you?
Afraid? No, but
well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll ask Bill to come over and keep you company tomorrow night. How'll that be?
Why, that'll be fine.
Another cog in place. Another gear meshed. Now one last piece to move and the engine of my revenge would be complete. Yes, it was revenge now. Revenge for what those two had done to me.
Buffalo, eh? It's a good idea, John. The way your trip could combine business with pleasure.
Pleasure?
You've been rather tense lately. The change of the scene will do you worlds of good.
I'm sure it will. How about Helen? Can you make it tonight?
Tonight? Yes, I'll be over after dinner.
That day passed like a dream. With me, the sleepwalker in the center, going through all the motions correctly, but waiting for the evening. For I wasn't hunted now. Now I was the hunter. A little past 4 o'clock that afternoon, I left the office and took a cab to the station. I went directly to my drawing room, and as the train pulled out, I called for the porter.
At midnight, sir?
Just a glass of milk, porter. Warm milk. And don't bring it before midnight. Till then, I've got a lot of work to do, and I don't want to be disturbed.
Just as you see, sir.
I gave the porter an unnecessarily large tip to make sure he'd remember me. Now, when the train stopped to change engines at Harmon an hour later, it was raining, thunderstorm. I pulled my hat down over my eyes, raised my coat collar around my face, and became just another shadowy figure hurrying to get out of the rain. I crossed the platform unnoticed, and 10 minutes later, I was on a train going southbound, returning to New York. I picked up my car at the parking lot and drove out to my house on the cliff. Parking on a side road, I climbed up the hill on foot. By now, the rain was coming down in sheets. Lightning split the sky and thunder crashed around me. I could see the light from my house perched at the edge of the cliff. Now, Bill's car was parked on the driveway, pointed downhill. Light came from the living room. I crept through the shrubbery to a window. There they were, Bill and Helen. My partner and my wife, sitting side by side on the divan. He drinking my whiskey, comfortable and warm, while I, the unwanted, was standing outside in the storm. How I hated him at that moment. I went back to Bill's car, crept beneath it, and went to work. The sound of the storm covered the noise of my tools as I disconnected the brakes.
and I was finished. And none too soon, for suddenly the front door opened, and Bill stood framed in the light of the doorway with Helen behind him.
Bad night for it, but we'll never get another chance like this one, Helen.
Well, all right, but come back quickly, Bill. I'm nervous.
Oh, nothing to be nervous about. John is halfway to Buffalo by now. It's a perfect opportunity to go over our plans with Bates.
All right, go ahead then. But hurry.
I'll have Bates back here in a jiffy.
Bates. He was going to fetch Bates, undoubtedly a hired killer. I laughed inwardly as the car got started. I could see Helen watching it as it picked up speed on the steep downgrades. Something was wrong now, and she knew it.
Bill, not the car!
Too late, too late. The car was roaring downhill out of control, charging toward the lip of the cliff. There was a crash and smash through the guardrail.
Bill! Bill!
He's dead, Helen.
Oh.
It's a sheer drop of 400 feet to the bottom.
John, I thought... John, you said you were going to Buffalo.
I am going to Buffalo, Helen, after I finish my business here.
Well, Bill, the car just...
It was a pity about the brakes. They must have come disconnected.
Disconnected?
Accidents will happen, Helen.
John, you killed him.
You and Bill thought you had pulled the wool over my eyes. Well, I fooled you.
Stay away from me.
I'm going to throw you over the cliff. I'm going to send you to join your lover.
You can't do this.
Tomorrow they'll find your bodies. They'll think you were thrown clear of the car when it crashed. They'll call it an unfortunate accident.
No, please!
Careful,
John.
Helen, you're at the edge. There's nothing behind you.
John, don't touch me! John!
Goodbye, Helen. If I had any feeling at that moment, it was a feeling of satisfaction. I, the failure, had committed the perfect crime. My scheme was flawless. I walked down the hill to my car, changed my clothes, and drove to the airport. As Roger Dunham, I boarded the plane for Rochester at 9:30 that night. Just as I'd planned it, we arrived at that city well ahead of my train. I was waiting when the long line of sleeping cars pulled in at the Rochester station platform. I boarded the train. My drawing room was just as I had left it at Harmon. I sank down in a seat, removed my coat and shoes. I looked at my watch. It was midnight. Come in.
Beg pardon, sir. It's midnight, sir.
Oh, midnight? Really? Oh, thanks for bringing the milk.
It's lukewarm, sir, just like you asked for it.
Thank you, porter. Buffalo, I went to my usual hotel, checked in, went to sleep. Oddly enough, I slept well that night. A deep, dreamless sleep. In fact, I overslept. For when I wakened, it was broad daylight and the phone was ringing. I struggled out of bed, lifted a receiver. Hello.
This is the long-distance operator. I have a New York City call for Mr. John Keeler.
This is Mr. Keeler speaking.
One moment, please. Here's your party.
Mr. Keeler?
Yes?
This is Miss Jackson. I've just arrived at the office. Mr. Keeler, I don't know how to tell you. The police...
What about the police?
They're here in the office. They want you to return at once.
Miss Keeler, what's going on there?
Mr. Sloan and your wife. Both of them are dead, Mr. Keeler.
Dead?
Mr. Sloan's car went off the cliff near your house last night. The accident was discovered this morning.
Accident? You say it was an accident.
It must have been an accident, Mr. Keeler.
She thought it was an accident. Now, if only the police thought likewise. I told my secretary I'd take the first plane back to the city, and I hung up. A few hours later, I reached New York, hurried to my office.
There's a detective waiting in your office, Mr. Keeler.
A detective?
He said he had to see you.
A detective. This was the test. I pulled myself together and opened the door to my office.
Mr. Keeler?
Yes. I understand you're from police headquarters.
Jerome is the name, sir. Assistant Inspector.
How do you do, sir?
We won't take up much of your time, Mr. Keeler. It's an open and shut case.
How do you mean that?
Well, stormy night, slippery road, bad brakes. Obviously an accident. I'm very sorry.
I nodded at the detective, and all the while I was laughing inwardly. He sat there, the very symbol of the law, and offered me official sympathy. No question of clues, nothing overlooked, nothing to fear. Not now. I, the weakling, had committed the perfect crime. Yes, Miss Jackson?
Mr. Keeler, there's a man out here to see you.
Send him away.
He won't go. He says you don't know him, but it's extremely important.
What's his name?
His name is Bates, Mr. Keeler. William Bates.
Bates? The hired killer. I told my secretary I'd see him. I went into the outer office. Bates was sitting on one of the chairs with an open briefcase on his lap. He was a big man. Tough looking.
I read the news in the morning paper, Mr. Keeler. Too bad. That was a tough break.
Yes. Yes, it was.
I didn't know if I should go after you now, but... Well, after all, I'm a businessman. My time is money.
I'm sure it is, but why tell me about it? You certainly don't expect me to pay you.
Why not? They're your plans.
My plans?
Well, look at them. Here they are. Why, they've even got your name on them.
I didn't know whether I could trust my ears. Whether I could believe my vision. Bates drew a roll of architectural drawings out of his briefcase and shoved them at me.
Look at them. There it is in your partner's handwriting. Plans for the new Keeler house.
Who are you?
I told you. My name is Bates. I'm a building contractor. Your partner and your wife insisted that the whole job had to be done in secret.
In secret?
They said something about you having just come out of a sanitarium. They wanted the whole thing to be a big surprise.
My mind was reeling. The secret meetings that led me to suspect Bill and Helen. Those meetings were to go over the plans for a house. My house and Helen's. I had killed my best friend and my wife. Inspector Jerome, I want to confess. I killed them. I killed them.
Killed them? Killed who?
Don't look at me like that. You know who I'm talking about. My partner and my wife. I killed them last night. Now I'm ready to take my punishment.
Well, calm down, Mr. Keeler. You've had a hard time. We realize this thing has been a great shock.
What are you talking about?
The homicide squad doesn't jump to hasty conclusions, Mr. Keeler. We've made a thorough checkup on your background.
What's my background got to do with it?
Well, we know you spent 3 months in a sanatorium recuperating from a nervous collapse. Now, on top of that, this unfortunate accident.
It wasn't an accident. I killed him.
We checked every movement you made since you left the office yesterday.
Then you must know.
We know you took the 5 o'clock train to Buffalo. Porter on your Pullman had no trouble recalling you. Why, he even told us how he brought you a glass of milk at midnight. You were a good 200 miles away from New York when the accident happened.
The detective went away, shaking his head. Sympathetically. My mind was in a turmoil. I had committed the perfect crime, and it had boomeranged. I went home. The house on the cliff was empty. Everywhere I looked, I saw Helen. Her photograph on my desk. Her red-tipped cigarette still in the ashtrays. 2 half-empty cocktail glasses side by side on the living room table. There was desolation in the house. Emptiness. Loneliness. And it would be like this for the rest of my life. But there was one way out. I always kept a loaded gun in the desk. I took it out of the drawer and in my hand. Here was my punishment. This time I couldn't fail. I placed the gun against my chest and pulled the trigger. I fell by the desk and lay there, where I am now, staining the carpet with my blood. I was dying, and I was glad of it. And then I remembered the plane reservation to Rochester. I could tell the police when they came, and they could check that, and they would know that I was guilty. But they came too late. They bent over me. I tried to tell them. I tried.
Riley, he's trying to say something.
Yeah, cool guy. He's too far gone to talk.
Now I'm lying here on the carpet, waiting to die, with my guilt locked up inside me. I can see a new figure among the police. A man in civilian dress with a small black bag in his hand.
How long is it since this man was discovered in this condition, officer?
About half an hour, Doc.
He's in very bad shape.
Will he live, Doc? Will he recover?
Oh, yes. He may recover, but only partially.
Partially? How do you mean, Doc?
Notice his inability to move so much as a finger. Notice how only his lips move, trying to form words without being able to speak. The bullet must have injured his spinal cord. This man is paralyzed. Totally paralyzed.
So now I know. I'm paralyzed. I'm not going to die. And yet I can see the policemen moving carefully about the room. And I hear them speaking softly as one speaks in the presence of the dead. So I've failed again. For the last time. Because I know my fate now. To live in this living death. Alone with my guilt. Forever. That is my punishment.
Seattle, all the whistles go, and the bells go, and the ferry boats are chugging right along, right along.
All the people love to ride the Blue Pacific on the Black Ball Ferry Line, to be specific.
While the whistles go, and the bells go,
and the ferry boats are chugging right along, right along.
Up on the upper deck, the view is great by heck. You love your Galapec and you're in clover. And when the whistles blow, you hate to go below,
cause that's the signal that the fun is nearly over. On the Black Ball Ferry Line up in Seattle, every single GOP and Democrat will hear those whistles go and the bells go as the ferry boats are chugging right along.
Right along.
Right along.
Right along. Get aboard when the weather's fine. Take your pick of the ferries on the Black Ball Line.
There's the Illihi and the Chippewa
and the Killiute, the Kalakala.
You'll find all these on the Black Ball Line.
The Tlahani,
the Nisqually.
There's the Malahat.
Well, think of that.
The Klingitat.
There goes my hat.
The S.S. City of Sacramento.
What are we doing down in California?
Pacific on the Black Ball Ferry Line, to be specific, while the whistles go and the bells go and the ferry boats are chugging right along,
right along,
right along,
right along. Down in the engine room, the boilers hum a tune, they're singing love and boom with deep emotion.
And on the deck above, each happy pair in love is holding hands and dreaming that they own the ocean.
On the Black Ball Ferry Line up in Seattle, every single GOP and Democrat will hear the whistles go and the bells go
and the ferry boats are chugging right along,
right along,
right along,
right along. Oh, the ferry boats are chugging, like a lugging.
All the ferry boats are chugging, chugging.
Ferry boats are chugging, chugging along.
Valley 103.1.
Suspense. Tonight, seeing you, Mr. Hume Cronin, as star of Too Many Smiths.
Right in here, Doc.
What happened, Sergeant Henry?
I picked this guy up in a detail.
Hand me my bang. Here.
What are you going to do, Doc?
Give him something to quiet him down.
You think he's pulling an act?
Hard to tell. Maybe temporary insanity. I put up his sleeve.
Come on, you. Easy. Who made a sucker out of you?
Fate. It was fate. Yeah.
This guy's crazy.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Let's put him to sleep?
Sure.
How long will he be under?
About 10 hours.
I'll come back and question him later.
What's he in for?
Murder.
Who'd he kill?
Oh, some cheap confidence mug. But the motive we haven't got.
Charles Richard Wallingford. But don't let that fancy moniker fool you. No, sir. No, I'm not a banker or an executive. I'm just a guy who works as a porter in a big office building downtown. But don't think I didn't have any ambition. I knew someday I'd get my break, and when I did, there was nothing going to stop me from going places. Not a thing. No, sir. Take that knife, for instance. It was 6 o'clock and most of the offices were emptying out. I had my broom and mop and was ready to start cleaning the office of P.J. Rogers. P.J., he's president of the Apex Advertising Agency. I always like to start with the big boy. I looked around P.J.'s office. Soft, easy chairs. Lots of buttons to push to make people jump. Yeah, this would be the life. Well, I started my broom going. I swept around. And I bent down to pick up the wastebasket. A piece of torn paper caught my eye. Now, I'll tell you something. I don't know whether it was fate or just plain curiosity, but I read what was written on it. It was a memorandum from the desk of S.M. Parry to P.J. Rogers. And it said, "The judges have decided that the winner of the toothpaste contest to be Pat Smith of Boston." I knew this was the Century toothpaste contest that just ended last week. 25,000 smackaroos to the winner. And this guy, Pat Smith of Boston, won it. Yeah, some guys have all the luck. Just for writing a slogan. $25,000, and the guy didn't even know he won it yet. Hey, he doesn't even know he won it. But I do. I got what is called an inspiration. According to the radio, the winner won't be announced till the 15th of this month. Today's the 12th. Charlie, my boy. Charlie, my boy, I say to myself, when fate decides to hand you a break, who are you to turn it down? I stalled around while I made sure everyone had left the agency. Then I went for the filing cabinets that had the entries. They were listed from A to Z. I found the names that began with S and started looking for Pat Smith from Boston. There were over 200 Smiths, Abe Smith, Betty Smith, Carl Smith. I went through them till I came to Ollie Smith, and the next one was Pat Smith of 500 Commonwealth Avenue, Boston, Massachusetts. I copied the address and the slogan. Ah, brother, to me that slogan sounded corny, but, well, who am I to judge $25,000? I went downstairs to the locker room, I changed my clothes, and I beat it over to Grand Central, and I caught the midnight to Boston. Commonwealth Avenue was a big hotel with a sign reading "For Men Only." I walked up to the desk.
May I help you?
You have a Mr. Pat Smith staying here.
Pat Smith? Now, let me see. George Smith. Harry Smith. Ah, yes. Pat Smith. Room 1133.
1133. Thanks.
Hmm? Oh, say, mister, look.
The clerk started to yell something after me, but the elevator door closed and I didn't wait.
Yeah, I didn't wait. I wish I had, but I didn't.
Yeah?
Hello. My name's Wallingford. Charlie Wallingford. I'd like to talk to you.
What about?
About $25,000.
Is this a joke?
That kind of money isn't funny, mister.
Come on in.
Thanks.
Just move my clothes and you can sit down.
Yeah, thanks.
Now, what can I do for you, Mr. Wallingford?
Mr. Smith, how would you like to make $12,500?
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it sure is.
What do I have to do?
You entered the Century Toothpaste contest, didn't you?
The slogan contest? Yeah, I do know.
I work for the people that run the contest.
I see.
And I can fix it so you can win first prize.
I'm beginning to understand.
Good. And I don't have to do any explaining.
This isn't exactly legal, is it?
Well, maybe not.
I thought all these contests were running the up and up.
They are. This happens to be what you'd call an unusual circumstance.
I see.
Somebody has to win. Might as well be you.
Tell me, why of all the contestants did you happen to pick me?
Oh, I don't know. Just chalk it up to fate.
Suppose I don't agree to your proposition.
Then I'll find somebody else who will.
Simple as that?
Yeah.
All right, it's a deal, Mr. Wallington.
Just plain Charlie to all my business friends.
Shake.
Yeah. Well, I suppose you're busy.
Not
here.
At all.
Well, don't you have some kind of job you got to get to?
No. That's why I came to Boston.
Oh. How long you been here?
2 days.
Hey, how come your entry had this address?
Oh, I reserved this room a month ago. I've been using it as my mailing address.
Oh, I see. Where are you from, Pat?
Nowhere in particular, just where my business takes me.
You don't say. You got any family?
No, not at all.
Maybe you have friends here in Boston, huh?
Not a one.
Well, that's too bad.
Why the look?
Oh, nothing. I was just thinking.
Yeah, about the money?
Right the first time.
You know, it's too bad our paths didn't cross before.
Why's that?
I think we'd have made a good team.
What's your racket?
Stocks and bonds.
Sell them?
Mm-hmm.
Legitimate?
What do you think?
I don't. Say, isn't contests out of your alley?
Oh, it's just a hobby.
I see. But sometimes they pay off, huh? Come on, let's blow this place and really celebrate our little deal.
Sure, anything you say.
I knew I had this guy figured from the second I laid eyes on him. Just a small-time confidence mug. And I knew he wasn't going to play 50-50 with me. No, sir. The minute he got his hands on that dough, I'd have to sing for my half. So I decided to take it all. I could be Pat Smith for a couple of days. And just so there wouldn't be too many Smiths, I'd fix this one up with a one-way ticket. We went to a place for coffee and sandwiches. I had some of my sleeping pills with me. By the time we got to the apple pie, he was stealing them.
Something wrong with me.
What's the matter?
My head. Going around like a top.
Come on, Johnny. Yeah. Give me your arm.
Yeah.
The air will straighten you out.
I just want to lie down.
You will. In a little while.
Where are you going?
Just walking.
I want to lie down.
Hey, now, wait a minute. Take it easy. Hey. Aaron.
Hey.
Hold up.
Where are we walking out in this dark?
Just to get some air. Bring your arm.
All right.
Hey, there. Hey.
Yeah?
What's wrong, mister?
Well, nothing, officer. My friend here isn't feeling good.
Yeah? Better let me have a look at him.
Oh, sure.
Hey, you wake up.
I just want to lay down.
Okay, mister. Just want to check up. Lots of funny things happen around here at night.
Oh, you can't be too careful. Good night, officer.
Good night.
I waited until the cop disappeared into the fog. Smith had passed completely out of the picture. Dragged him out to the end of the dock. I looked around me and I found a piece of lead pipe and I... Then it was over. I stripped off his clothes and I changed with him. I stuck the pipe under his belt and I pushed him into the water. I watched his body sink. Then I left the dock and went back to the hotel, went up to Smith's room. After a while, I went to sleep.
Thank you.
Yeah?
Smith? Mr. Pat Smith?
Speaking?
There's a young lady waiting for you.
Waiting for me?
Yes, sir. She says she's your fiancé.
Paralyzed with that phone in my hand.
Hello? Hello? Mr. Smith? Did you hear me, sir? Your fiancé.
My fiancé?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. I'm coming right down.
She'll be waiting for you in the reception room.
This didn't jive. Smith said he didn't know anybody in Boston. I started to break out in a sweat. I had to go down and face her. Trying to avoid it would make things look suspicious. I took my time dressing, but my mind was going like a machine gun. But it was no use. There was nothing to do but face her and to try and bluff my way. Pardon me, miss. Are you looking for Pat Smith?
Yes.
Well, I'm Pat Smith.
Oh, I'm afraid there must be some mistake.
I guess there is.
The Mr. Smith I'm looking for is my fiancé.
Are you sure he's registered in this hotel?
Oh, I am. Very sure.
Well,
How foolish of me. There must be two Pat Smiths here. You and my fiancé.
Yeah, of course.
It's such a big hotel. I'll ask the clerk.
Yeah, do that.
Goodbye, Mr. Smith. I'm terribly sorry. I disturbed you.
Well, that's okay. Two Pat Smiths. That was something I hadn't counted on. I watched her cross the lobby to the desk. She spoke to the clerk. He smiled and he picked up the phone. The dame sat down and waited. In a few minutes, a middle-aged guy walked up to the desk and the clerk pointed out this dame to him. I took a good look at this other Pat Smith and beat it into the elevator and went upstairs to my room. I headed for the desk and I started going through the late Pat Smith thing. I found his papers and then I saw what I was looking for. A copy of the slogan he'd written. Brother, I breathed a sigh of relief. It was the same as the one I copied from the agency's files. Fate is sure sticking closer to me than a suspicious wife. That stupid clerk would have sent me to the wrong Smith, and if I'd knocked him off, I really would have been in a jam. You know, I didn't sleep good all that night. Around 8 a.m., I headed for the drugstore in the lobby. My head was buzzing. I wanted a cup of black coffee. As I was drinking my second cup, I glanced in the mirror in front of me, and I saw the second Pat Smith come in. I turned around to watch him buy some stuff at the counter, razor blades, shaving soap, cream, stuff like that, and a large tube of Century toothpaste. Toothpaste. It was only then it began to creep into my mind. Maybe this Pat Smith had entered the contest also. And if so, maybe he was the guy that was going to collect the 25 grand. Maybe I've been barking up the wrong tree. A sick, weak, empty feeling settled in my insides. I put a quarter on the counter and followed Smith into the lobby. I beg your pardon.
Yes?
Isn't your name Smith? Pat Smith?
Yes, it is.
Funny thing, that's my name also.
Oh, yes. I heard there was another Pat Smith staying here.
You mind if I sit down?
No, go right ahead.
Thanks. Kind of funny, two Pat Smiths living under the same roof.
Well, I don't know. Smith's a very common name.
You're right there. That's how I met your girlfriend.
My girlfriend?
Yeah, the tall, blonde, good-looking dame.
Oh, yeah, I remember. But wasn't she looking for you?
I don't get you.
Well, the clerk telephoned me in my room that she was waiting downstairs, and when I met her, it seems that I wasn't the Pat Smith she was looking for. Darn it.
You what?
No, so naturally I assumed it was you.
Couldn't be a third Pat Smith here.
Well, hardly. I spoke to the clerk about it, and he checked the register.
Maybe she had the wrong hotel.
Well, I doubt that very much, because I've seen her about the lobby for the past few days.
You have?
Well, what's wrong?
Huh? Nothing. I was just thinking. Yeah. I see you're doing a crossword puzzle.
You interested in puzzles?
Sometimes. I like contests better. You know, the kind they have on the radio?
Yeah.
Did you ever enter one of those?
Well, as a matter of fact, I have, yeah.
How about the Century toothpaste contest?
Of course, $25,000.
That's it.
That's quite a big prize to shoot for.
Yeah, sure is.
What kind of slogan did you write?
Oh, I think it's pretty good. I got a copy right here in my pocket. Care to read it?
Oh, I sure would.
Let me see now. Here it is. I don't think it'll win first prize, but it might win one of the lesser ones. Well, what do you think, Pat?
Yeah. That's pretty good. Much better than the one a certain party I knew wrote. Didn't take a book critic to see that the slogan this Smith wrote was better than the other one. I was a fool. If I'd looked through the files of the agency more carefully, I'd have seen that there were two Smiths and which Smith won the dough. I was in a tough spot. The night at 10, they were going to announce the winner, and I had just 6 hours to figure out an angle or lose the 25 grand. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Smith.
Who's this?
Mr. Smith's fiance, remember?
Yeah, I remember. What do you want?
I think you and I better have a little talk.
What about?
About my fiance.
Where are you?
In the lounge.
I'll be right down. Well, hello.
Sit down, won't you?
Thanks. Okay, what's on your mind?
You?
Oh, I'm flattered.
You needn't be.
Okay. What about me that's so interesting?
Why you killed Pat Smith.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Let's not be stubborn about this, Mr. Wallingford. Must I repeat my question?
No. Who are you?
You already know that.
What's your name?
Betty.
Betty what?
I'm asking the question.
How do you know he's dead?
In the evening papers.
Here, let me see that.
Here. Police discover body in Charles River.
The first thought would be Charles Wallingford, but fingerprints taken from the dead man proved his identity to be Pat Smith, small-time confidence man wanted by the police in three states. Police are looking for Wallingford. New York City police have discovered that Wallingford's been missing from his rooming house for the past 5 days.
You see how I know.
Where do you fit?
I was supposed to meet Smith here. We had a little job planned.
Oh, I see.
You went and spoiled it. Why? Come on, start talking. If I don't like the tone of your conversation, maybe the police will.
Well, I couldn't see any way out but to tell her the whole story. I couldn't bluff. I was scared and she knew it. She didn't say anything while I was talking. She just sat and stared at me.
I always told Pat those contests would be the death of him.
Well, that's how it is. This other guy will collect all the dough.
You given up so easily?
Do you have any ideas?
$25,000.
Yeah, I was a fool to get mixed up in this in the first place.
You sure this Smith is going to win?
Can't be anyone else.
Yeah. Well, you've gone so far, why not take another step?
What do you mean?
I met this other Smith just as I met you.
I know.
And from the way his eyes lit up, I could see he was kind of sorry I wasn't his fiancé.
So?
I don't think Mr. Smith would mind very much taking a walk with me down to the river, holding hands.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Just the way you did the other job.
Well, I don't know.
Scared?
No, I'm game.
Good.
You get him out of that dock. I'll take over from there.
Don't worry. He'll be there.
Yeah.
By the time the cops fish him out of the river, we'll have the money and plenty of distance.
You mean we go together?
What's the matter? Don't I appeal to you?
Sure.
Well, wait here. I'm going to phone him and cast out the bait.
Okay. Here's hoping he bites.
Don't worry. He will.
I watched her walk out of the lounge to the phone booth across the lobby, every eye on the joint on her. I knew Smith didn't have a chance. And if I hung around her, I wouldn't either. She was murdered, that dame. After this job was over, I was heading in the opposite direction. I could see her talking, and when she hung up, I could tell by the expression on her face that this Smith was a cooked turkey.
He'll be down in 5 minutes. You better beat it.
Okay, baby. You're carrying the ball now. See you on the dock. I glanced back at the table, and she was sitting there, calmly powdering her nose for the kill. Then fate stepped in again. I don't know why, but it suddenly hit me that maybe she was giving me a double cross. After all, how long do I know this dame? I went back into the lounge through the street entrance, and I managed to sneak into a booth behind the one she was sitting in. In a few minutes, Smith came in through the lobby entrance and he walked over to her.
Well, good evening. I came down as quickly as I could.
So I see. I suppose my phone call surprised you.
Yes, indeed.
I'll come to the point, Mr. Smith. Somebody is going to murder you.
What?
Please just keep your voice down.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. But in heaven's name, why? Why would anyone want to murder me?
For $25,000?
But I don't have that much money.
You will.
Look, I don't understand.
The Century Toothpaste Contest. You hit the jackpot.
How do you know? The winner won't be announced until 10 tonight.
I got a way of knowing these things.
I'm going to call the police.
Sit down, Mr. Smith. I got a better idea. I know the only way.
She lowered her voice, but by straining, I got wind of what she was pulling. Yeah, that much was clear. She wanted the money, but without a murder rap. Then she was going to tip off the police about me, which would give her clear sailing with Smith and the dough. Yeah, she was clever, all right. But you know, it didn't burn me up. I wasn't even sore. I was just tired and scared. I wanted to get away, anywhere, so long as it was far from Boston. I had a few dollars left, so I beat it. I went to the railroad depot. My train didn't leave for an hour, so I walked around, I bought a paper. I felt like a punch-drunk fighter. I was licked, and I knew it. Yes, sir. Fate had let me down. I was through. I was standing in the crowd, waiting for the gates to open, when I saw it. Right there on the front page, I saw it. I started to laugh. I couldn't stop.
What's the matter, buddy? Hey, you're Charles Wallingford, alias Pat Smith. You're wanted for murder.
What a story. Starts out as a simple swindle and winds up murder.
Yeah, but his story still doesn't tell me what I want to know.
What's that, Doc?
The cause for his temporary insanity.
Oh, it doesn't at that. Hey, that newspaper. He was reading... What? On the first page. Yeah. Here. Take a look at this.
The winner of the $25,000 Century Toothpaste Contest was announced last night. The lucky winner was Miss Pat Smith of the little town of Boston, Georgia.
Hello, fada. Here I am at Camp Granada. Camp is very entertaining. And they say we'll have some fun if it stops raining. I went hiking with Joe Spivey. He developed poison ivy. You remember Leonard Skinner. He got ptomaine poisoning last night after dinner. All the counselors hate the waiters. And the lake has alligators. And the head coach wants no sissies. So he reads to us from something called Ulysses. Now I don't want, this should scare you, but my bunkmate has malaria. You remember Jeffrey Hardy. They're about to organize a searching party. Take me home, oh Marafada, take me home. I hate Granada, don't leave me out in the forest where I might get eaten by a bear. Take me home. I promise I will not make noise or mess the house with other boys. Oh, please don't make me stay. I've been here
one more day. Dearest father, darling mother, how's my precious little brother? Let me come home if you miss me. I would even let Aunt Bertha hug and kiss me. Wait a minute, it stopped hailing. Guys are swimming, guys are sailing, playing baseball. Gee, that's better. Mother, father, kindly disregard this letter.
About this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.